So Nick Nurse said he has to knock it off, essentially, that Pascal Siakam has to knock it off. Hubie, when you become the guy on the team, or one of the guys in the team, as Pascal has become, how much more emphasis or how much more focus is there on you from officials, from opposing teams?
Well, it depends upon the officials that come out. Every night you have a different personality. And if you just played back-to-back nights, the same team, and then you just came with three different officials each night, the game would be refereed differently. Mm. When you coach in the league, you understand that. You explain it to your team after 5-7 minutes into the first half and second half of how the game is being called. And that has to be brought out, especially to your high scorer, who right now has stepped up and is playing great basketball. Nick's trying to send him a message that we need you for your full minute rotations. And you cannot have you sitting on a bench for long periods of time because of dumb fouls. And you say, well, they should honor the fact that he's averaging 26 points and he's shooting a high percentage and he's doing all these great things. That's true. But the key is, he's still a young player and he has to understand he's now at a different plateau. We've moved you up in the chain now. We need you on the floor. If it's going to be 38 minutes, 38 minutes. You cannot get yourself into bad situations because we all know this year there are an awful lot of new young referees in the league, and they are not privy to your talent yet and to where you are expected to perform nightly in Toronto. So that has to come with time. It's early in the season, but Nick's trying to straighten the guy out, and I like what he's doing because they need him.
Hubie, first, great to hear your voice, as always. I want to ask you about the Raptors this year, and I imagine you have been in this situation before in one of your coaching stops, but how difficult or how challenging is it to go from one year where you have a definitive late game scorer, as the Raptors did in Kawhi Leonard, and then to try to figure out who that person is just a couple of months later?
Well, first of all, you got to understand that every time that you're on the floor, there has to be three scorers. And right now, Lowry, Van Fleet, and Siakam are answering that. Gasol is late right now contributing major numbers, but that's okay because we all know that he's played a lot of basketball from even the end of last season. So you look at that and you say now, are you going to rotate eight guys in the big games like you did in the playoffs when you held Golden State and then also Milwaukee, two teams that average 117 and 116 during the year and during the playoffs. You held them to more than 10 to 12 less points in all the big wins. So consequently, defense is a major thing. But then when you're rotating and you're only going to rotate eight guys, then three scorers have got to be on the floor at a time. We used to rotate 10 guys. We rotated 10 all the time until we got to the playoffs. The main thing was we have three guys out there that we're going to. They're going to be the primary shot attempt people. And then also on the second unit. See, right now we have a lot of good teams out west that have great starting units, but their backup teams, their second unit guys can't score. So when it gets to playoff time, when we get down to the nitty-gritty, first, second round, third round, well, now all of a sudden, where is the scoring going to come from? So to me, it's a challenge to the coaching staff because you always have to get your three best scorers high percentage shots in their best areas. I don't care what offense you run. I don't care what you're doing in transition, but you have to get them high percentage shots in their best areas. And they have to understand the difference between a bad shot and a good shot, a good percentage shot for the team, because you're not trying now to make the playoffs. You're trying to get into that third round conference finals and finals. So it's a different type of terminology that you would use with Toronto versus say, a Chicago or a New York or one of these teams that are just trying to get to 500.
Hubie, since you're on in the city and we have you, and Jeff and I both think this was an inspired selection, I do want to ask you. Last year, you were the only person to vote for Fred VanVleet for NBA Finals MVP, won by Kawhi Leonard. And I think, I'm not sure anyone in this market has asked you that, but what was your thought process behind selecting Fred for the Finals MVP?
Well, look, coaches look at things a little differently sometimes. I just thought that in that game that you had to win, and the game before that, he stepped up big, not only shooting great percentages with the three ball, but he made the threes inside of 3 to 4 seconds, which was maximizing the pressure on the shot. So consequently, he did an incredible job for you offensively, but more important, he took Curry out of the last quarter in the key wins, and that alone should have gotten incredible ink across from television and from guys that were witnessing the games and writing about the games. He was able to hold Curry down in shot attempts and then in field goal percentage, and then also turned him over a number of critical times. So when you look at it from that game, the key game that night, to me, if Golden State would have won that game, I had on the paper Iguodala that night for that game. And then in this game, I had VanVleet because of the tremendous pressure that he played under and that he gave it to you. But a lot of times, key defense is overlooked in the pressurized ending of the great games. Could you stop their best guy who had to do it for them at that time because no Durant and then no Thompson? This young man stepped up and did it and laid it out there physically for you. So I thought that, you know, he should be mentioned.
Hubie, what do you make of the Raptors this year?
Well, I think they're in the chase. Why not? I think that what you have to do is develop that small forward position, because you still have your three-man rotation at center and power forward. And if Nick's going to stay in the big games at eight-man rotation, well, then you're still solid right there. And they're going to be able to score against anybody, rebound, et cetera, with Siakam, Gasol, and Ibaka. Now, the big key is by playing VanVleet and then Lowry together, naturally, their scoring is up over last year. More shot attempts now, and they're going to shoot a good percentage for you, and they're going to shoot big the three ball for you. Now it comes down to the third guy there. Is it going to be Powell again, like at that position, or at small forward coming off the bench? Well, when you look at the small forward position, what do you want out of that position now? Point-wise, you can look as a coaching staff and say, shot attempts, et cetera, will build up the scoring for those other five guys. Okay, now, what do we want out of the players that are the two guys that are at that small forward position and then the swing guy who comes off the bench that can play either position? Well, when you look at that, you have to honestly look at it and say, are they capable of getting X amount of points each night? Well, in order to do that, you've got to get them that amount of catches in their best areas, all right, so that they feel that not only are they a part of the team defensively and rebounding, but also that they have a position with the team night in and night out that they're going to get shots. And can they do that not only against the sub-500s, because you're asking them now to give you more points against the plus-500s. And I think that's how you have to look at it. But from experience, from style of play, from the coaching staff, you're going to be in a hunt. And I know everybody's blowing a load of smoke on Milwaukee and Philadelphia in the East, which they should. But then again, they're both a little weak. Philly's bench is very questionable. And Milwaukee, that guard position, when you give up a player like Brogdon, that leaves you not only the points, but then also the shooting percentages, field goal threes and foul line, and then the great defense, plus the fact he can make the play either at the point guard or two guard for you under pressure. So that was a major loss. So to me, you're in the hunt. Why not? You should be, and you should be feeling good about your team.
Hubie, there literally is no other person on earth I would want to ask this question of, given your experience and years in the game. When you watched Nick Nurse last year, particularly in the championship, and I know that when you watch a game, you also are evaluating coaches and how they do out-of-bounds plays and certain things like that. What did you learn or what did you discover about Nick Nurse?
Courage. He had courage to make critical moves, reducing your rotations, playing matchup zones, all right, at different times. He did the unexpected, which he has done over in England and then at the small college jobs and then down there in the D League or G League, whatever we want to call it. He's not afraid to make the bold move and then suffer the consequence because of his personality if it doesn't work out. That, to me, jumped right off the page every single game, whether it was against Milwaukee or whether it was against Golden State. And remember now, you were big underdogs in both of those.
Right.
And you came out because he got the team to believe in what he was presenting, even though it wasn't the normal or what people wanted. He had the courage to step up and do his job, philosophy-wise, what he believed in, and laid it out there. And I thought that was tremendous, night in and night out.
Hubie, as
that's
a
hard to do.
I was going to say, as a coach, how difficult is it to institute something new in a game, interest your players to the point where they're going to carry it out, but also not kind of do away with their whole comfort zone? Like, how do you find that balance between being innovative and being bold and at the same time making sure your guys are in position to do what they do best?
Yeah, well, the big thing there is it has to come with practice.
Okay.
Come on, you can't do things without it being in practice. The best coaches on timeouts, underneath the basket, on the side, are running great plays that they run every day against your zone or your man. And the good coaching staffs have plays under and side out of bounds against zone or man. Now, the teams that are sub 500, you'd have to question whether or not they play the same as you do inside of the last 5 minutes, because you have got to understand that what goes in the first 43 minutes might not go in the last 5 minutes. Plus, who are you going to in the last 5 minutes? Are you going to the key guys that night, or are you going to the guys that you know have been able to do it for you in previous games? They all have pet plays that they shoot the best out of, percentage shots, et cetera, and so forth, but also where they're comfortable getting the ball. So that comes with through practice and repetitions, and then also in previous games that you might not think that they did something, but they were working on it in games where they might be ahead by 20, 25 points and are working on different things. You can always tell the IQ of the coaching staff when you see all of that as you're watching a game.
Hubie, last one from us, about a 90 seconds or so. I'm going to sort of fanboy here a little bit. You, I believe, were coaching the Grizzlies when LeBron James was a rookie. Do I have my chronology right? Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. My question is, what was it like game planning for LeBron James when he was a rookie in the league?
Hello, LeBron James, to me, came in a man. He was a man. And he came into the league, and there have been a number of other guys like him, Garnett, et cetera. We can go to Moses Malone that came in right out of high school, like a Kobe Bryant. They came in with, I hate that word, stagger, but they had it. They had incredible confidence in what they can do. But I used to say this about LeBron James. I was a big fan of his right off the bat when I saw the size at 6'8", the 260, and then I would tell people, you don't like LeBron James? That's fine, because at that time, a lot of people did not like him in his first 5, 6, 7 years in the league, because people were saying, well, is he as good as Michael Jordan? Well, people didn't want to hear that, okay? Well, I don't care which side of the fence you were on, but here's what I would say to people. He can score with his back to the basket. He can score in the open floor with either hand. He has a mid-range game, and like all guys that were learning the three distance coming out of high school or coming out of college, he could make the big three when it counted under pressure. And then I'd said this, give me three players in the league that are faster than LeBron James from basket to basket with or without the basketball. And you would stump them. Guys in the league, coaches, management people, guys that covered a team, because his athleticism was off the charts. Not just because of the speed, but the strength, where you would bounce off of him when you tried to foul him hard, going to the rim, you would bounce away from him. And that's when I did Zion Williamson in an exhibition game against Chicago. That's what I saw that he had at his size, 6'6 and 285. Okay. He had that ability to, from the foul line down, for you to bounce off of him. So you do not disrupt his shot, no matter how hard you try to foul him. So the vision now, Zion does not have the vision that LeBron came into the league with. Because when LeBron came into the league, he was good as the majority of the point guards that were in the league in seeing all 10 guys, the other 9 people, and seeing ahead of. When you talk about the legendary guys, like the top 10 or 12 guys that ever played, you have to see that they see the game in slow motion. You don't see the game in slow motion. Most players don't see the game in slow motion. They see the game in slow motion and can visualize what they should do with the ball. That's why they make incredible plays when they're being trapped, or whether it's a 3-man gang up on them. They'll make the correct play because they have not only the vision, but they also have the ability to put the ball where the ball has to go. I'm going to wear you out talking about LeBron James.
that's fine. Believe me, we do not mind being worn out by you, and we certainly don't mind being worn out about LeBron James. Hubie, listen, thanks so much for joining us again. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Anytime.
And be well.
Thank you, Hubie.
Anytime. Okay. Richard, good talking to you earlier.
Always, Hubie. Great to catch up with you.
Things go well for you guys. You know, you can call anytime. You know that.